Dr. Rod Carr is the chair of the government's Climate Change Commission, an independent statutory body tasked with providing the government with independent, analytical and credible advice on how New Zealand should meet its climate goals of carbon neutral by 2050. He's a banker, or better, central banker, it's probably a better description, by background, professional director, and served as vice chancellor of the University of Canterbury. Dr. Carr, welcome to Taxpayer Talk.
You're right. Good to be with you.
Dr. Carr or Rod?
Rod is fine.
Rod's fine? Great. And with us as well, we have Matt Burgess. Matt's a senior economist at the New Zealand Initiative, former senior economics advisor in the office of Sir Bill English, and a sceptic of some of the things, or the economical analysis of the Commission's draft advice to the government, which is currently open to public consultation. Welcome, Matt.
Hi.
I want to start with some common ground, gents. I assume that we all here agree that emissions must come down. We accept the scientific consensus that climate change is man-made. But the real question is, how do we best get there? Is that a fair representation?
I think that's common ground.
I think so, yeah.
So I guess the why we're here is what took the Taxpayers Union's attention, Rod, was your public comments that, quote, these changes, quote, are going to be on the scale that will rival the transformation from our controlled and regulated economy in the 1970s through to the early 1990s. It will be on the scale of the demilitarisation after the Second World War. It will be on the scale equal to getting ourselves out of the Great Depression of the late 1920s. And I would guess it might rival the sums of all those parts, ends quote. Do you stand by that? And why do you think so much change is necessary?
Thank you. So I think there are two drivers for the scale of change that's necessary. One is our emissions from agriculture, which is one of our split gases, and the other is essentially the long life gas emissions. If we take agriculture for a start, biogenic methane is a greenhouse gas, and it is a difficult to abate gas with our ruminant pastoral livestock practices. So there's some very challenging issues there to achieve the desired reduction to meet the targets. And on the long life gases, the major source is the burning of fossil fuels in the open environment. There's no doubt there are other sources of fluorocarbons and so forth, nitrous oxide, but the biggie is the burning of fossil fuels in the open environment. And that technology has been an incredibly powerful enabler of the civilization that we have built in the last 200 years, because fossil fuels have been a source of significant energy.
Yeah, I think the challenge is
to decarbonize not just our economy, but the global economy is going to require a substantial change in the sources and uses of energy.
So you would have you heard the earlier podcast we did with Oliver Hartwich?
I have indeed.
You have? So, I mean, Matt, obviously the New Zealand Initiative, or your colleague, Dr. Hartwich, has said that the Commission's analysis shows the plan isn't necessary, or at least many aspects of it, to achieve our emissions targets. But you argue that the plan nevertheless seeks to intervene into the lives, economy and livelihoods of New Zealanders. Take us through on why you think these measures aren't necessary, given Rod argues they are, particularly around these long-term gases.
Well, I think there's a couple of really big takeaways from the Commission's report. The first is that we have multiple pathways to net zero emissions in 2050. That's our target. The Commission identifies, under its plan, we'll spend $250 a tonne by 2050, delivers us to net zero, keeps us there. But the Commission also shows that current policies, including the emissions trading scheme, can also get us to net zero emissions in 2050. The second interesting implication of the Commission's analysis is that we can actually stay at net zero after 2050 quite comfortably. The Commission, I think it's fair to say, has made comments to suggest that will, staying at 20 net zero, even if current policies get us to net zero, staying there is going to take a lot of tree planting to keep us there. That's not acceptable. Actually, the Commission's analysis doesn't show that. The analysis shows that we still have options for maintaining net zero after 2050 with current policies. We could plant no trees after 2050 and maintain net zero, again, on what the Commission's found. The consequence is that we have choices about how we get there. So each time the Commission says we must decarbonize this much in transport, we must do this time-critical issue, necessary action here or there, that word necessary is actually, I think, not correct in the sense that we could do none of the Commission's recommendations and still achieve and maintain net zero emissions. And that's on their analysis.
Rod, do you think you've overstated, are you guilty of overstating the cause?
I don't believe so. I think that quite rightly Matt has said that the Commission's work has identified there are a number of pathways that are compatible with achieving our statutory targets. So that is ground we share in common, and it's reassuring to know there's not a single one. Secondly, I do think it's worth being clear about what the pathway that the Commission has articulated as our path is and what it is not. Our path is not a central plan for the New Zealand economy.
But it does look like it when you go through the list.
It is not. It is very clearly a demonstration pathway that says there are a series of internally consistent inputs, assumptions, outputs and outcomes along a pathway. I can guarantee that from 2030 looking back, the path that we will have followed will not be that one. That external events, internal choices, prices, consumer preferences will all shape the path we take.
Okay, so rather than get lost on different paths, let's just check that we want to go to the same destination. Do you accept that New Zealand or the role of the Commission should be to find the cheapest or least economically damaging pathway to the targets?
No. And it's very clear that the Commission is not tasked with finding the least cost pathway. There are at least seven matters that the Act requires us to take into account in formulating emissions budgets and other matters that must be taken into account when we think about a reduction plan. Society is concerned about the cost, but is also concerned, and we are required to have regard to a range of other matters, such as the impact on generations to come, such as what our Act requires us to do, such as the distribution of impacts. And yes, costs are one of the matters, but it is certainly not the case that the pathway that is required is the least cost pathway.
But by definition, if you're determining who bears the cost, that sounds a lot like a plan. Matt picked you up on the use of the word necessary. What you're saying, though, is that it's not necessary, or do you accept the premise that your particular plan, as opposed to what the initiative proposed, which is more reliance on the ETS, or at least in the areas covered by the ETS currently, is no more than that is necessary to hit the carbon zero by 2050. Do you at least agree with that?
But the Act is concerned about how we hit net zero. The Act is clear that there are matters that need to be taken into account to inform what would be an emissions reduction.
But you've just acknowledged we can't possibly predict the future to that degree.
No, but we can know that the advice can take into account other matters, and that includes the certainty or risk. That includes future generations. That includes the Crown partnership with Māori. That includes the range of things listed in the Act.
Well, look, can I just jump in there? Look, I don't see anything in the Act, and I'm happy to be corrected. I don't see anything in the Act that prevents the Commission committing to a principle of least cost, achieving our emissions targets at least cost, while having regard for these other things.
Well, except that's not what the Act requires. So we'd be absolutely wandering off making up our own mandate.
No. The Act gives you a purpose of mitigation along with adaptation. It requires you to have a regard for a long list of things. There's no question about that. But there's nothing within that that contradicts the idea that you could commit to a principle, other things being equal, let's say, of removing or reducing carbon at least cost where possible.
Well, if Parliament had wanted that, they would have written it in the Act.
Do you think that you are obliged not to take the path of least cost?
No, I don't believe we're obliged not to take that, but I do
say... So you're making a conscious choice.
I do say that the pathway that the commission is required to give advice on, and the government will then ultimately have to decide on, needs to take account of cost, risk, the future, not just
cost. So the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has said that it, quote, if a cap and trade system, i.e. like our emissions trading scheme, has sufficient stringent cap, then other policies such as renewable subsidies, which is something the Commission has recommended, have no further impact on total greenhouse emissions. Rod, what do you know that the IPCC doesn't?
I think the first is the conditions about an effective and all-embracing emissions trading scheme.
To you saying
let's start with the point. We believe, the Commission believes, that markets, prices, producers and consumers making, you know, their preferences known through choices has a significant contribution to make to achieving our statutory targets.
Yeah, well, that's the benefits of the ETS. Yeah, we take that as read.
But we also believe that the ETS itself cannot do, in the time available and the constraints the Act requires, all of the work.
But your own modelling, I've seen the diagrams in your report, show very clearly we get there by 2050 under current policy settings, i.e. the ETS.
But it also says that there are other pathways that can be taken.
And you're choosing that other pathway.
No, we're recommending that you look at all the pathways. We're consulting on the advice. We've given a demonstration pathway of a series of internally consistent trade-offs. And we've already got 6,500 submissions from people coming back, in some cases saying you're not being ambitious enough, in some cases saying you haven't taken into account the impacts at regional or local levels enough, and in some cases people saying you haven't let markets play their full part.
In some cases saying that we should be getting there as the cheapest way possible.
Well, as I'm sure some will say, and that certainly was what Parliament had the opportunity to consider. It would have been a very simple criteria, however society is complicated.
Rod, you've been accused of departing from your statutory mandate, or to use a colloquialism, departing your lane. Your draft report or draft plan talks of, quote, reshaping our cities, close quote. For example, you also say that we need to walk 25% more, cycle 95% more, and take transport 120% more by 2030. You get into matters that look a hell of a lot like urban planning.
Yeah, but let's be careful what we do say. We say, if you are on our path, which is a demonstration pathway, then you will observe a bunch of things that are consistent with what's
going
on.
But if we're all in electric cars, why does it matter whether I'm walking or driving?
We are not saying you have to walk. We're saying, but on that path, you will find that you observe 25% of current ICE kilometres.
Because cars will be too expensive.
Cars may be somewhat more expensive. People may choose to walk somewhat more.
Well, I mean, these are your words, not mine. Cycle 95% more.
You describe them as if we are suddenly going to force people to work. What we're saying is that we'll make different choices.
So what you're saying then is the government can't pick and choose
areas of your pathway. What we're saying is the government won't be able to tell you to walk if you don't want to. That is true. Nowhere in our advice do we say make people walk.
But you can't buy an internal combustion engine vehicle.
What we're saying is that by 2032, on the pathway we use to demonstrate a way forward, you would want to restrict the importation of ICEs to only those vehicles where there was not a practical alternative. Nowhere do we say ban the imports. So we have to be careful what we do say and what others say we say.
So you're saying that New Zealanders will still be able to purchase internal combustion engines post-2030.
What we're saying in our advice and its draft is that there is a time between 2030 and 2035, and 2032 is a date that's sort of been suggested, whereby you would not want to be importing internal combustion engines.
Except
where there is a alternative.
No. This is very important because we seem to be hearing quite a climb down from what your report says.
You talk about there is no ban. It says simply.
I've seen you quoted an article saying that there is.
I have never said there is a ban on imports.
Let's turn to the process being run by the Commission. Are you proud of the Commission's consultation process and the way you've run it? Do you think it's been a good one?
Yeah, so in the lead up to preparing the draft advice on the direction of policy and the draft emissions budget, we spoke to over 700 individuals, groups, whether they're NGOs, whether they're business leaders, business groups, individual companies, over 700 in preparing the draft advice. The draft advice is now out for consultation. We've got over 6,500 submissions so far. And I expect that then when we finalise and report, it is still advice to the government. Any regulatory process that would need to follow the government adopting its emissions reduction plan and budgets would go through the normal regulatory process.
It's been reported to us earlier this week by a member of industry. I understand it's a maybe one of the ones you're referring to. It was in a meeting with one of your commissioner colleagues, said that the commission had received so many submissions that, quote, they couldn't possibly all be read, close quote. Are you saying that you've asked those thousands of people, including many of our supporters, who have submitted in good faith, can you guarantee that their submission will be read and absorbed? Or was this consultation a scam?
I can guarantee that every submission will be read. We have a team of 10 at the moment reading, handling each submission, some of which have come through our portal and therefore being processed in a database. Others are having to be manually loaded because they did not come through our portal. They will all be in the database. They're all being tagged so that the principal analysts relating to the particular matters are going to review those. They will then provide advice to workshops of the board about what the submissions are suggesting and advice about how we will respond. So in one way, our commission member is correct. I do not propose to read 6,500 submissions. That would not be a reasonable expectation. But would every submission be read? Yes.
So one of the areas that the business groups have also picked up on, and I note that 15 pan-industry groups wrote a public letter to you calling for more transparency particularly around your modelling. Man, you've spent quite a lot of time in this area. Just explain, what are some of the areas where you've obviously worked in a Minister of Finance's office, you understand the budget process, we know all the transparency that goes on around there. Do you think that, to explain what those concerns are around lack of transparency around making the modelling available?
Yeah, so let me start by saying the Commission has got an incredibly difficult job. The reason we've been a bit tough on the Commission around transparency and the willingness to get everything out there is because of the central role that analysis has to play in this space of climate change policy. If you've got multiple choices and lots of degrees of freedom about how you get to your emissions target, you've got to make choices. And that means that puts analysis right at the center. You can't fly blind on matters as complicated and having to weigh off all the different trade-offs that the Commission's been asked to consider. You need analysis right at the center of it. So in order to understand the merits of a case for going early on electric vehicles, for example, we really want to see the analysis underlying that to get a sense of whether actually it's a good deal for New Zealand, whether it's well aligned with what we think is important as a citizen of New Zealand, or whether what other objectives are being pursued instead, if that's what's happening. It's hard to do that without access to the modelling. So, look, as it turns out, a lot has been released, but ultimately we don't have the information we need to understand how the Commission has reached a conclusion that its sweeping reforms are going to cost less than 1% of GDP. We just don't have enough. We know that there's wage information and wellbeing information in the general equilibrium models that we don't yet have. We also know the Commission said that it will release all the information, I think, in June or July. We don't understand why that can't happen now.
Well, the consultation's closed, by
The consultation closes in 2 days. We just can't see how these various things are in the public interest. And we worry that, you know, look, let's be clear. This is one of the biggest and most important policy processes New Zealand has seen in a generation. I think it's reasonable to expect in the circumstances, a first-class process that's absolutely as transparent as possible. Every effort's made to make sure that we completely understand the logic behind what's going on. That's a prerequisite for being able to support any recommendations and ultimately policies that come out of it. And we're not getting it.
Rod, why didn't you release the general equilibrium model?
Let's get a few things fat. Huge amounts of the data that is used to drive these models is and has been on our website. And if you can specifically identify information that is in the form of the data that you think is available to us that's being withheld, please identify it.
I've got a dozen emails in the last 3 weeks from economists saying you haven't been transparent about your data. Are you seriously suggesting?
I'm seriously saying let us know the data sets they think that
your general equilibrium model.
Come on back. Let's identify data as one of the issues that are asserted as having data that is not being made available. We'll come to the source code for the model, right? And the source code for the model is source code that is being built by a contractor alongside our use and development, was originally contracted to be made... was made accessible under a Creative Commons license with supporting documentation.
If it's Creative Commons, we should be able to have it.
On the 1st of June or thereafter, depending on how long it takes to complete documentation.
Is it not finished?
That's not the issue.
Is it not finished,
Rod? Ready for release under a Creative Commons license.
Rod, you've recommended the most transformational public policy changes in multiple generations.
Can we dial back and
that's a simple question.
We are not building the model. We are running the model, but it is not in a form to release under a Creative Commons license.
But a Creative Commons license means, by definition, is that we're able to get a hold of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're saying it's not ready, isn't it?
It's not ready for release under a Creative Commons license.
So how could you come to the conclusion, and come back to your word necessary, if you haven't got a functioning general equilibrium model?
No. We have a functioning general equilibrium model. We have run workshops at which people have been invited and turned up and been able to watch.
And those people at that workshop are emailing us saying they don't have the necessary information.
The models have been peer reviewed. The workshops have been held. The data is available on the website.
And you won't release the assumptions within it.
That is not the assumptions are on our website. Right? Let's not confuse data and assumptions and inputs with the source code for the model, which we will release when it is in the form to meet the requirements of the Creative Commons license.
Let's park it
and the documentation.
Let's park it for a moment. Will you allow the economic and legal community in New Zealand to give feedback when that model is ready?
I'm sure they will.
So you will open another submission process on it?
No, I'm sure they will give feedback. We will have presented to the government, to you, the commission, to the world. I'm sure they will.
Jordan, the enormous risk in all of this is that, as we saw with the Zero Carbon Bill 2 years ago, when the data arrives very late in the process, it has no impact. So we saw right at the end of the Zero Carbon Bill, after political parties had taken their position on whether to vote for or against, then we get access to the cost-benefit analysis from the Ministry for the Environment that shows we're paying $3,000 a tonne per tonne of carbon to get to net zero, an outrageous figure that would almost bankrupt the country, almost literally.
Yeah,
that has no impact when it arrives after the decisions are made. So the problem with all of this, the data turning up, is the later that it turns up, the harder it is to stop whatever policy has been put in motion. I'm sorry, there is still data that we... There's two things here, Rod, just to be fair. It's not reasonable, in my opinion, to say, tell us what you want when you haven't provided documentation of the model that doesn't tell... So we don't know what...
You can't have it
we
both ways.
And while I acknowledge that a lot of data has come out, we still don't have wage data. We still don't have the infrastructure costs around electric vehicles. We don't have wellbeing data that we know is in general equilibrium model, and we don't know what else. There is important information that we don't yet have. We haven't had a reason why not.
Rod, you've said publicly, this is quoting from a Stuff piece, talking about the government, but they need to be well advised. The advice needs to be transparent. It needs to be evidence-based. It needs constructed after due consideration, and it needs to put the government of the day in a position to have the courage to make these tough choices and for the country to be carried with them. Do you at least accept it would have been a better process to have had this information out there as part of the consultation process?
We have worked with the timeframes that we have been given, and the team has worked amazingly hard to achieve the deadlines that have been set for the delivery of the work, and we are satisfied with the quality of the advice that we will offer.
Do you accept that the reason why so many questions are being asked is that the Commission claims that the cost of your plan is just 1% of GDP? NZIER says that it's between 15% and 25%. Can you name
These are not comparing like for like. Let's at least agree on that. Well, NZIER modelling is some years old. It used a different set of assumptions
old, isn't it?
About costs and technology paths and uptake rates.
Isn't this why it needs to be tested? I mean, can you name a single, not just a commentator, a professional economist that concurs with your 1% of GDP claim?
Well,
can you name one?
The reality
can
is
you name
that
one?
The 1% of GDP is in the order of magnitude that the UK Commission and the EU have modelled themselves.
But under an ETS regime, you're taking plan.
No, that's not entirely true. I mean, the ETS is only partial in Europe. It doesn't include agriculture or transport, as I understand it. The UK is certainly confused about Brexit and whether they do or don't continue to use the European scheme for their emissions pricing.
Look, I'm conscious of time, and you've given us half an hour. When you took on this role, were quite public that you wanted to take the politics out. You said that you told Newsroom that you were being careful not to overstate your mandate, and that you're in fact seeking a mandate from the public to push harder and faster for climate action. Do you think you'll get that mandate from the majority of submitters?
Time will tell. I'm not going to preempt exactly what is in the 6,500 and rising number of submissions. So I don't know the answer to that. We will know when we process the submissions.
And one of the mandate issues is this idea around gross and net emissions. The legislation's very clear that you were tasked around, and in fact, looking back on Hansard, it's clear that it was deliberate that you were to focus at net emissions, and yet in both the plan and in your even clearer public statements, you've gone out on a limb and argued that it is gross emissions that matter. Do you accept that you've gone wider than
initial... Because there are three other things among the seven things that we must have regard to. One of them is land use change. Another one is the intergenerational effect.
Isn't that best left to councils? How is land use?
No, land use change is about, as a consequence of signalling through markets, the change in land use is a change in land use is driven by how we trade
only
off.
Greenpeace type. I've only got two more. Left-wing journalists were picked. You left off Hamish Rutherford, the Wellington business editor at the Herald. You left off interest.co.nz totally. You left off Richard Harman. You've left off the serious end of town and instead given it to Simon Wilson to have for a week in advance. I come back to the question, are you proud of this process and do you really think you're keeping the politics out of it?
Yeah, so let's be clear. We had engaged with a number of journalists over an extensive period of time as they built their understanding of climate policy and climate action. And we were very concerned to make sure that the draft of the advice was not leaked because of the impact it would have on markets.
But that's ridiculous. Treasury do that every budget. There are always documents from the government that they release under embargo or have a lockup. Why didn't you have a lockup and make it give it to all under those circumstances?
We made a choice, and the Commission and I made that choice.
Final question, because I haven't read this OIA, but I'm reliably informed that the Commission have provided this to a third party, and I'm mindful that you've told us, or your chief executive's told us, that you personally intervened, that part of that release strategy and the media strategy of not giving it to serious journalists before being to be able to go through it before your launch with the Prime Minister and James Shaw is that you consulted with the Office of Prime Minister and James Shaw. And I ask you,
that is not true.
That's in a written, I will... I've just been informed by a very reliable party. Are you saying that your
choice
organisation did not?
Our choice of who was not consulted with the minister.
So you picked just the lefties?
That is not true either. We picked the people who had engaged on this matter with us over months before.
Yeah, right. Your supporters. Thank you, Rod Kerr.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, we're back from the Climate Change Commission's office. For some reason, we rush it out pretty quickly, Matt. What did you make of it?
Look, the big takeaway for me was just, I guess, what we all knew. The Commission isn't particularly interested in cost minimisation. So, you know, what I think we heard was the Commission isn't obliged to cut at least cost, but it could if it wants to. And it's allowing...
It's a huge blank cheque, really, isn't it?
It's a blank cheque, and this is the problem with the legislation. This was our submission 2 years ago on the Zero Carbon Bill. You can be specific about what you want from the Climate Commission. You can tell it to cut at least cost, while worrying about issues like distribution, et cetera. You can put that in ledge, just like you do for the Reserve Bank with inflation, et cetera. That wasn't put in a ledge, and now we're seeing the result, which is the Climate Change Commission that feels it can roam across the economy, pick and choose which technologies it wants to stamp on, no particular obligation to demonstrate any of its ideas are going to work, no checks and balances after the fact. If you're interested in cutting emissions, this is a terrible model. If you're worried about climate change and want to maintain public support, this is a terrible model. There's no public interest in a climate change commission that gets to do whatever it feels like and doesn't have to worry about what the rest of us worry about, which is to get the job done for the lowest possible cost. We heard Rod Carr say, we are not interested in cutting at least cost.
Yeah, I think that was very significant. I didn't really get my head around, and obviously I wanted to go in there because I think it's just so outrageous, and Oliver made this point last week, that why are we making the same mistakes Europe is? I mean, you've got to go to ETS, let it do its job, don't go and pick and choose, and then the emissions, you know, this waterbed effect idea. Well, I didn't really, what he was saying was that their way's better because it better deals with long-term gases, was that?
Well, their way is better because we get to do whatever we feel like worrying about this week, whether it's intergenerational equity or whatever. The problem is that...
It's not their job.
These are just... It's not their job. Every time they worry about other things besides emissions, it's at the expense of cutting emissions. On their own modelling, their plan costs between 5 and 16 times more the least cost approach. This is precisely because they're worrying about everything except getting us to our emissions targets at the least cost.
Take me through just one more time, because... that Rod was not willing to move, you know, but he may well know this ends up in court, but he was not willing to budge one inch on this, that he had not been transparent on the modelling. Take me through, you talked about, you know, we've released the data and things like that. I know you guys at the initiative have been asking lots of questions around this and have been, on the basis of some comments that your colleagues have been making, banging your head against the brick wall. Just take me through, what would he genuinely feel that he is being transparent or...
It's genuinely hard to understand. It's absolutely clear that data has been held back and we haven't been given a reason why. Now, he's at the top of a really big organisation with lots of complex data and modelling that's going on. We don't know what he's being told or what he understands. He may be told, he may be getting advice that says we have released everything. Our perspective, people we talk to around Wellington all tell us there's absolutely more to come out, and yeah, it really matters to understanding. Now, when Rod said, you know, well, tell us what you want. Well, look, this is the problem. They haven't even released documentation of the model, so we don't know the full set of data that we haven't got yet. For all we know, less than half the data has been released. Lots come out. And, it, you know, look, it's no excuse to say, well, we've published a lot, which is what Rod did. The problem is all the stuff we're not getting, because actually we still haven't had enough to understand why it's less than 1% of GDP for these sweeping reforms. We still don't really have a good sense of how EVs won. And that's because the Commission hasn't released everything.
When you say EVs won, you mean why the huge focus on...
Why the huge focus on EVs, and how does that make sense if you're trying to cut the most emissions for the least cost? So what we had been told was that the way that whatever the Commission's doing, the way the models work is to reduce emissions at least cost right across the economy.
Yeah,
it's that's true.
We were talking on the way back that... off tape that I sort of really zoomed in that this model isn't finished, and you said, well, models are constantly tinkering with them. That's the way these things work. But no, I just don't see that as an excuse. And this Creative Commons idea, well, that, by definition, that it should be in the common. That is what that whole model means.
Yeah, I'm struggling with that, and also the fact that you get yourself in a position, you know, you write an agreement that stops you from releasing the model when you said from the start, we want to release the model. Something else that I thought was really striking was Our submission at the initiative has been focused around the idea that the Commission's model shows that current policies get us to net zero, and the Commission's model shows that we can stay there easily. Rod agreed with that. Now, that destroys their case for the sweeping transformation of the whole economy that we want. I think Rod...
That they want.
Rod essentially confirmed that that transformation has nothing to do with emissions.
And but then he'd acknowledge, man, markets are better, we believe in consumer choices and things like that. But then, but I mean, it was like he was talking about a different report.
And you see that in the report itself. The Commission acknowledges all of these same sorts of things. The Commission, in three places in the report, says that if you have a binding emissions trading scheme, other policies don't cut emissions any further. You can only cut emissions once. Mm. The Commission acknowledges that in its report in three places and then proceeds to recommend 25 recommendations that end up giving you more intervention than Muldoon. They never reconcile the fact that they've said these policies can't cut emissions with the fact that they're recommending those policies. Mm. Kind of an important issue when you're talking about tens of billions of dollars of policy in the name of emissions. They're not going to cut emissions.
Matt, you've been in the top level of discussions around the Minister of Finance's office. How do you, you know, overall, how do you think this process has been handled? And what, looking into your crystal ball, what do you think is going to happen? And how do we at least blunten the sharp edges of this?
The process pretty much couldn't have been worse. I think you've got big stakes combined with an unusually poor quality process. You know, this shambles of just fundamental disagreement about what has or has not been released.
The idea that Simon Wilson is the expert, you know, to the one to work with them, just ridiculous. When your business editors aren't getting the copies of the papers and are expected to question the ministers with an 800-page report that they're given half an hour beforehand.
On the biggest reforms that, in a generation. Exactly. For goodness sake, it's not good enough, okay? It's just not. And I wish I'd said that to Rod because I'm not sure how much negative feedback he's getting. He's got a tough job, to be fair to him, under difficult circumstances, but the process has been shocking.
That's the reason why the process is important for that area checking.
It should have been belt and braces. And look, if that's what it takes, you go back to the governor, say, you need to give us more time, change the ledge, then do it. And be seen to do it, right?
Yeah.
And do the best you can to be transparent. So there have, within the constraints, there still have been choices made around media, around transparency, around decisions about how to interpret the ledge, you know, whether you're modeling, you know, whether you're picking winners or whether you're running a process. Those are choices available to them. They've made bad choices on all of those fronts with real consequences. And, you know, I just detect a real reluctance to even want to address that in some of the answers we heard today.
Yeah. Matt, two final points. The first is congratulate the New Zealand Initiative guys, because this is the first time that here at the Taxpayers Union we are getting, really thanks to, I think, you guys blowing the whistle on this, a lot of major corporates contact us saying, hey, you guys need to be standing up and you need to be telling your people about it. We need to blow the whistle on it. And that's really the work, as I've acknowledged on this podcast before, you guys have rightly said this is something to sit up about.
Yeah, can I just, I mean, look, just very quickly, the key thing is we can all agree, you know, let's cut emissions, etc.
Of course.
You can agree with that and then raise doubts or questions or decline to go along with a bad plan to get to those targets, right? And what we're getting is a bad plan. In the end, what the Commission is doing will not cut emissions.
And finally,
and they have to be account for that.
And finally, we've got 48 hours left. I think midnight Sunday, isn't it? We can make submissions until. If you haven't yet made your voice heard, the Taxpayers Union's made it easy. Go to www.taxpayers.org.nz/climate. Matt, thanks for joining two special episodes of Taxpayer Talk.
Thanks, Jordan.